Good evening, this is Mae Bressel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 812, June the 29th, 1987. I'm having a problem answering my mail, and before I get into the regular part of the broadcast, I just have to explain it's impossible to answer all the letters that are coming in. I have them piled up back to last August, which is really very depressing. So I'm going to ask you, if possible, to tape this off the air if you hear World Watchers on the air, and then play back the tape to get the sources of references for articles that, and I'll give them as much as I can remember to do on each broadcast, because I no longer can pull out articles, copy them, and answer the individual letters. The boxes of mail I have are just too huge. And for those of you who sent self-addressed stamped envelopes for the bibliography sheets, I'm going to return the money and discontinue that, and you'll have to take the bibliography off of the air. A very important article from Newsday was in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, June the 29th, 1987, titled "Ex-CIA Aid Linked to Contra Drug Fund." This is very important for the Christic Institute suit, and it is important for the linkage of the person they're writing about in this article, Felix Rodriguez, to Vice President George Bush and the entire Republican Party, the hierarchy in Washington. The article says, a money launderer for the major Colombia cocaine cartel, that's the Medellin cartel, has told Congress in secret sworn testimony that he funneled nearly $10 million to the Nicaraguan Contras through former CIA operative Felix Rodriguez, and the congressional sources are passing this on. This gentleman testified behind closed doors before the Senate Narcotics Terrorism Subcommittee on Thursday and Friday. Ramon Millan Rodriguez is serving 35 years for racketeering and for charges related to narcotics money laundering. And he said the Medellin cartel believed it was currying favor with the Central Intelligence Agency when it directed him to give the cash of the cocaine profits and money to Mr. Felix Rodriguez. Million Rodriguez, I don't assume they're relatives, with the same last name, testified that the money was delivered in several installments after 1983 when he was arrested. The subcommittee source said that that Million Rodriguez claimed he passed the money in Central America to those couriers who were selected by Felix Rodriguez. And the interesting part about this, of course, Felix Rodriguez, otherwise known as Max Gomez, is one of my particular favorite characters out of this entire Iran-Contra scandal because of his wearing Che Guevara's watch band, his working in Bolivia with Klaus Barbie and the death squads, his closeness to Vice President George Bush, and also this article says it tells about how when he worked at Elopango Air Force in El Salvador, and this is where the airdrops were made. The airdrops were part of an enterprise financed by the United States sale of missiles to Iran, and General Secord and Albert Hakim, his associates, have testified before the Iran-Contra hearings, as well as Felix Rodriguez, and Mr. Eugene Hasenfuss worked with Felix Rodriguez in these airlifts at the time that he fell down in Nicaragua. Eugene Hasenfuss, I did many broadcasts about him. As soon as he landed in Nicaragua, the former attorney general under Jimmy Carter, Griffin Bell, went down to rescue him. It was pretty heavyweight for a otherwise unknown, was supposed to be an unknown person in this entire operation of funding the Contras right out of the White House. And after Griffin Bell went there, I cited on the air articles that Griffin Bell was on the board of and very much a part of the brokerage firm of E.F. Hutton, and that the chairman of E.F. Hutton at the time that these large narcotics deposits were made by both Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele out of Brazil and Bolivia went into E.F. Hutton, and the chairman was Scott Pierce, the brother-in-law of George Bush, Barbara Bush's brother. He stepped down since then. And also a good hunk of the narcotic money went into Merrill Lynch, and Donald Reagan was chairman of Merrill Lynch before he became Secretary of the Treasury, and then Chief of Staff of the White House. And in the testimony of Mr. Hakim, he told how Felix Rodriguez had access to the Vice President's office, went in there, and George Bush then admitted that he'd been in there twice and that he was very high up in Washington, And if he had any concerns, he didn't take them through certain channels regarding the arming of the Contras or any other matter. He went directly to the White House. This Felix Rodriguez was the cute little guy who held up the big flag with the sickle showing that the Soviets were in Central America. He pulled out his red flag at the time of the hearing and thought he was being very dramatic and cute. There's an article in Guardian this month, June 24th, 1987, called The Great George Bush Vanishing Act, and one of the biggest scandals of the entire Iran-Contra is the lack of any mention of George Bush being at any meetings. They'll refer to the meeting of the Big Five, the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the head of the CIA, the NSC, the President, but they're carefully avoiding George Bush. And I won't cite most of this article on this particular program, but it says, it states the documented role of Bush's staff in the scandal dates back to November 3, 1983, when Bush's top advisor and former CIA agent, Donald Gregg, G-R-E-G-G, met with Contra airlift manager and former CIA agent Felix Rodriguez to discuss the situation in Central America, according to their self-serving chronology published in Bush's office. Rodriguez and Gregg had worked together in the 1970s as operatives in the CIA's infamous Operation Phoenix, which murdered tens of thousands of civilians, Vietnamese civilians, in southern Vietnam. And then Rodriguez goes on to work with top-level Bush staff. He was in and out of the White House. He had access to George Bush, and at least three occasions Rodriguez met with Bush himself. And, of course, the relationship of Gregg and the CIA and Vietnam and Bush as CIA director is very, very close. And the date here in this article was November 3rd, 83, when the staff started meeting with Felix Rodriguez. And remember, Bush was CIA director earlier in 1976-77. Che Guevara was killed in 67 by Felix Rodriguez, who also worked at the Bay of Pigs with these people and met earlier with the Anticastro Cubans at the time of the Bay of Pigs. So this person testifying now before committees in Congress talks about the CIA being pleased that cocaine money profits was going to the Contras and that it was going through Mr. Felix Rodriguez. And, of course, I've done many broadcasts on the allegations or the information I had about George Bush with Klaus Barbie and the links of the Nazi international group to the people in the White House and the cocaine traffic. There was an article that was in the newspapers today. I'm sure all of you saw it, and all of you that follow World Watchers. Althea Flint, the wife of Larry Flint, was found dead in a bathtub, 33 years old, passed away this weekend. I'm going to do a lot more on the chronology of the Flints again. When I met Larry Flint in 1983, a lot of people didn't understand why Mae Bressel got into writing an article for Hustler magazine about Korean Airline, but I had a particular reason, and I'll state it again. I had called Larry Flint and said, you know, the man that went down on that airplane, Larry McDonald from Georgia, had close relationships and worked with Joseph Paul Franklin, the man that shot you, that paralyzed you when you were in Atlanta or outside of Atlanta in Georgia at a trial, obscenity pornography publication trial. And I said, would you like the real story on the real Larry McDonald and the Korean Airline and the meaning of this particular incident? And of course, he was very interested in it, and we were on the telephone almost every day. I could hardly write the article. He was on the telephone calling me all of the time. And since that time when I met him about 2 years ago, Joseph Paul Franklin did confess that he was, in fact, the person who had shot Larry Flint. And I was one of the first people in the United States that knew or had made the connections. And Larry Flint had a lot of good security team, and he didn't know how I, sitting in Carmel without any help from anybody else except what I read and put together, knew who had shot him and paralyzed him. He never went to trial for that because the belief was that if he went to Georgia for the trial of shooting Larry Flint, the jailkeepers would let him flee, and he already is in jail for killing several couples, one couple in Salt Lake City, and he's the gentleman who shot Vernon Jordan in Ohio. He never went to a trial on that or got off on that. But the article I did was that one on the Korean Airline, and I designed the Larry McDonald pie. And I really keep saying over and over again, I should put this whole thing on the air and just read it to you, the importance of that, because John Singlau was on the board of Western Goals, and Larry McDonald was chairman of Western Goals, the one who went down. And, of course, as soon as Larry McDonald was dead, the whole operation of Western Goals went to back to its origins in the East Coast in Washington and Maryland, the headquarters there, where Carl Spitz Channel took over, and the board of Western Goals is an entire military operation. Now, a person very active with John Singlau of Western Goals was Lieutenant General Mitchell Wirbel, and Wirbel worked as the extension of our United States government, making silencers, heading up hit teams, working with the mercenaries and Robert K. Brown, who is the associate not only of General Singlau, but Robert Owen, who worked out of the Robert Gray offices in Washington. If you've been listening to the testimony or hearing the programs of World Watchers, and I no sooner got onto Singlau and Western Goals and started writing the article than Mitchell Wirbel moved into the home of Larry Flint, as did Gordon Novell and G. Gordon Liddy. And these three top heavies from the military literally took over. He wanted me to do this article for Hustler, which came out in February of 84 on the KAL. But as soon as I met him, he wanted to start a magazine. He had bought the LA Free Press in 1978, published one issue, and it was about the Kennedy assassination. A few weeks later, he was shot and paralyzed. And then he wanted to start again on the Kennedy assassination and asked me to have the lead article in a new magazine that would be called The Rebel. And I'm going into the chronology next week, not this week, on what happened at that time. Some of you know it and some of you don't remember it, but on the anniversary of John Kennedy's murder, 20th anniversary, Larry Flint got out the Rebel, but by then he was already drugged and Althea was drugged, and they were as good as dead in terms of being public persons any longer. He was to go into federal prisons. He was crazy. I was down in Los Angeles December 16th. At that time, Althea was at Cedars-Sinai, and she was already practically out of her mind and just tangling Western Goals and the Kennedy assassination, the Nazi connections that are both related to each other, caused these people from the Defense Department to move in. And as I say, what happened to them is a good lesson to anybody who would try to tangle these things at such a high level. On my broadcast, number 624, that was November 21st, 1983, and you see how fast the years go, that was 4 years ago, I suggested that Larry Flint was already out of his mind. He had called me on November the 23rd. He was going to fly over the Pacific Ocean. He was going to drop into the ocean and die like Larry McDonald did. And I said, who is around you? I knew, and on the broadcast and with the sheet that accompanied it, I said, I know somebody has gotten into him. And then I put on the broadcast, a couple of house guests moved in, one Gordon Novell and the other Mitchell Wirbel. And Gordon Novell was palling around and helping John DeLorean. John DeLorean got out of all of his lawsuits, now has $22 million from Germany to start a new car company. And Gordon Novell was involved with the Kennedy assassination and had a role down in New Orleans. Jim Garrison wanted him as a person to come to his trial of Clay Shaw. Novell was protected by Governor Rhodes of Ohio. And the allegations that I had about John DeLorean's cocaine were that it came from Klaus Barbie. And John DeLorean was traveling around until he was through with all of his problems. And I'm sure he's still very close to Gordon Novell. And Novell moved into Larry's home and into Hustler magazine. And I'll put it in some chronological order for you, because this is the end of a saga that could go nowhere once he decided to open up these raw nerves, and the system has ways of taking care of people besides just shooting them. Now, I hope some of you are watching the news very carefully to see some of the events that are happening in front of our eyes. They're happening so swiftly now that it's hard to add them up, but I think we have to take time and add them up and visualize what we're seeing, because what we're seeing now is only going to portend what the future is going to bring to us. Number one, June 13th, just this past week, Ronald Reagan was at the Berlin Wall, or just within 2 weeks ago, saying, tear down the wall. It's the only time that a president of the United States has been in Berlin two times. Most of them visit once, saying, tear down the wall. The Los Angeles Herald had an article June 15th, 1987. Reagan says it's time to unite the two Germanies. We're going to make them one. June the 14th, 1987, Richard von Weizsäcker was the guest at Harvard University, and I mentioned that on the programs as the guest speaker at graduation, and his father, Baron von Weizsäcker, was the liaison of Adolf Hitler and the Vatican and had a role in the Battle of the Bulge, which involved George Patton and General Fritz Kramer, and the American Fritz Kramer and George Patton II was the one in that battle. George Patton III is on the board of Western Goals with John Singlaub, Admiral Moore, and a long list of who's who of military persons. The next item, Pope John Paul II was in Poland, closer to Moscow than ever, just he was about 30 miles from the Russian border. He was kissing the graves of a Solidarity victim. And there was an article in the Miami Herald, June the 7th, Pope sees Polish trip as a way to penetrate Soviet empire. The next item is that Ronald Reagan is preparing to make war in the Persian Gulf. He wants to get rid of the head of the government, Mr. Khomeini, Ayatollah Khomeini, and the Pahlavi family would be restated on the throne. And the Pahlavi father was a pro-Nazi, worked with Adolf Hitler during the war. He was so Nazi that when Chase Manhattan, the CIA, and the powers that be overthrew Mossadegh and put the Pahlavi family into power, the father had to move to South Africa. And we're getting ready to take over Iran. You might have read June 29th that a group of Iranians were working with Oliver North to assassinate Ayatollah Khomeini. That was in U.S. News and World Report. And the San Francisco Examiner had a story June 24th, North plans to assassinate Iranian officials. So we're getting ready to move into Iran and retake the territory that we had established as our base back in 1954. Also, Pope John Paul II has invited and already entertained Mr. Waldheim, who came from Austria, and you saw their smiling face in all the papers. San Francisco Chronicle had a big lead article, Pope Praises Waldheim, and it shows him holding hands, and he's calling him a man of peace. Following that, you might have seen a picture in this morning's paper of Premier Nguyen Khoa Ky and General Westmoreland, both dressed in their tuxedos and grand marshals for a parade in New Orleans, the home base of Gordon Novell and the powers that be down there. 2,000 Americans and South Vietnamese veterans in Vietnam War marched together for the first time in a parade led by General Westmoreland and former South Vietnamese Premier Nguyen Khoa Ky. Now, Ky is the one who kept pictures of Adolf Hitler over his desk, and he has been accused of being involved with heavy narcotic traffic coming in from Asia, and he lives in California, of course. We have a large number of very political screwballs out on the West Coast. We have our fair share. The parade in New Orleans had the U.S. Rangers, the fellows that invaded Grenada and killed Maurice Bishop, the U.S. Air Force, the Vietnamese Navy, the Vietnamese Marines. It stretched 2 miles. Ky and Westmoreland, one was commander of the U.S. forces, one of Vietnam. They were marshals in the parade, and they talked about the historic beginning of an annual parade. Ky lives in Huntington Beach. He called for the liberation of Vietnam. 90% of the Vietnamese people are waiting for him. We must be free and unify all Vietnam, Ky said. They are waiting for us in North Vietnam. And the Vietnamese in California, I don't know about in other states, are training, and with American help, to go back to Vietnam and take Vietnam, because in this grand strategy of a thousand-year Reich, it includes every country, not a few. Also, in this morning's paper that was so filled with material, I already had decided what I wanted to use for this evening, but I am forced to look at what today has because it ties in with a lot of things that I've been talking about for years. San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Post. Sensitive technology. The United States to let Egypt build the best American tank. Israel was not consulted. They may object. The Reagan administration has agreed to allow Egypt to produce the United States' top-of-the-line main battle tank, the M113, won A1 Abrams in a move that will transfer sensitive technology to the Middle East capital and support Egypt's bid to become the dominant arms merchant in the Arab world. Now, as soon as Ronald Reagan was in 1981 and Alexander Haig was Secretary of State, it was quickly arranged for Mr. Sadat to be murdered, for Mr. Mubarak to be put into position, and Mr. Abu Ghazala, who sat on one side of Mubarak, who wasn't touched by a weapon in the barrage of shots that came down, has been arranging this affair with Caspar Weinberger and Mr. Armitage of the Defense Department, Richard Armitage, and who's the Assistant Secretary for International Affairs, with Caspar Weinberger, and made a fait accompli that this is arranged and Egypt is going ahead with this. Armitage was mentioned by Ross Perot, who's no flaming liberal, and asked the government to investigate his narcotics traffic deals, that he has been tied up in narcotics, and Caspar Weinberger said Armitage is too important to this deal, not this deal, the Egyptian, but he's too important and we won't touch it. And Ross Perot thought, if the First Lady wants to stop drugs, and she's saying, just say no, you can't have the deputy of the Assistant Secretary for International Security Affairs, Mr. Armitage, involved in these things. And Armitage was involved with Mr. Calero and the Contras donating $90,000 or more and paying the drug enforcement agents and going over to Lebanon under the guise of wanting to get a hostage, a very controversial deal of the CIA paying the DEA. That involved Mr. Armitage, and Jack Anderson has had articles about Armitage and his questionable background, but Weinberger says he is too important. These people are totally above the law at any point now. Armitage working with Weinberger and Abu Ghazala is very important, and also Abu Ghazala and the role that he played with Mubarak when Sadat was murdered. Incidentally, when Robert McFarlane had his suicide attempt, which was fairly feeble, and he recovered nicely enough, I suppose, one of the few visitors he had at the hospital when it was tight security for everybody else was Madam Mrs. Sadat, the widow of Anwar Sadat, who was murdered. Now, this article on Egypt making American bombs brings up the fact that it may have a problem for the United States, because the transfer of arms is a loss of a big order of tanks from the United States factories, and it will have a significant effect on American jobs. We are a captive nation, and we are putting our jobs out of this country, and we will be beholden to the powers that be to exist without the factories that make these weapons. This article also says U.S. Ambassador Frank G. Wisner has told Western officials that the importance of the program is that it represents another bond in the relationship between Egypt and the two countries, between Egypt and the United States. Now, Frank G. Wisner was appointed by Ronald Reagan. If you want to know the background of Frank Wisner's father, read The Belarus Secret by John Loftus. His father was responsible for bringing most of the top Nazis from Eastern Europe to the United States that worked with the Galen Organization, worked with our Defense Department, moved into areas like the Dallas-Fort Worth area that were effective in covering up the assassination role of persons other than Lee Harvey Oswald. The Belarus Secret tells you about Frank Wisner, the daddy, and in the index, I copy the index, you'll see maybe 40 or 50 or 60 pages alone on his group of emigre institutes and ex-Nazis brought to the United States and the Galen operation. And the partner of Reinhard Galen was Otto von Bullschwing, who came out to Silicon Valley and formed this Stanford Technology. Originally, it was TCI, Transcomputer International, and its subsidiary, IIS, International Imaging System, was bought by Albert Hakim with money he had in Iran, where he accumulated then Secord and Shackley, General Secord and Colonel Dutton, and CIA agent Theodore Shackley and CIA agent Thomas Kleins. So the Galen operation from the California end, with Ronald Reagan here as governor and their secretary as translator, Ronald Reagan's appointment secretary, Helene von Damm, working with the Galen group. I think if you look really closely, you can see this net or web and how it is working. Now, can the sons of those fathers be blamed for the role that the fathers had? I've talked about Baron von Weizsäcker and his son Richard von Weizsäcker, who is currently president of Germany, who told Harvard just last week that his father had no role in the Nazi exterminations. There was Frank G. Wisner, and now there's Frank Wisner, his son, who's working with Caspar Weinberger and Armitage, Frank G. Wisner Jr., sending the making of American weapons to Egypt, and knowing the role of Egypt in the Middle East, closing in on Israel, and of course Israel is excluded out of all this. George Patton II was working with General Fritz Kramer. George Patton III is on Western goals. Ollie North's father worked with George Patton II, and Ollie works with George Patton III as Western goals became Spitz Channel's office. Carl Spitz Channels took it over, and of course Channel, and of course Ollie North is very close to that operation. And then if you want to read more about Egypt becoming a Nazi stronghold, you have to read Galen, Spy of the Century by Kukerich, and the takeover of Otto Skorzeny and Adolf Eichmann of the northern part of North Africa and turning it into a Nazi warhead. It hasn't been many years since World War II to follow the entire pattern and the way it's flowing to know now the way it's going. There's a report, Caspar Weinberger is begging the Japanese, please help us, they urge Japan this week, help make the next generation of fighter planes, let the United States help. They're contracting them out in Japan and not from here, they're not buying them from us. And Weinberger suggested remodeling the existing American military aircraft with the use of Japanese technology, and those would be made in Japan. And then finally, along flowing those lines, there's Henry Kissinger shopping for a canal, an article that was published by Warren Howe from Spotlight. Henry Kissinger made a trip to Central America in February to buy the Panama Canal, not on his behalf or for Henry Kissinger's associates, but it's for a consortium, Tokyo Group, a powerful industrial bank, and the Japanese government. And the Japanese are planning the acquisition and development of 500 square miles of prime real estate surrounding the canal. To sweeten the deal, they have offered to modernize Panama's century-old railroad, all financed by Japan at a cost of $1.4 billion. The Japanese are off on the greatest worldwide takeover raid since World War II, said Dr. Raymond Chu, a corporate economist. They are after a broad variety of American assets, and remember, Bank of America sent their officials last week to help them bail out of their problems, asking for $300 million. This article says Henry Kissinger is playing the role of an Indian scout for foreign businesses using Kissinger Associates and the Tokyo stockbrokers Nomura, Nikao, Yamayachi, and Daiwao are major players on Wall Street. They have now opened the Big Four, their branches on Wall Street that wasn't allowed before. In 1986, their number grew from 550 to 2,000 staffers on Wall Street, and the fee for Henry Kissinger is reward for helping the Japanese if they take over the canal, apart from other consultant honorariums, is said to be over $5 million. So there is your trilateral group, Germany, Japan, and United States is the bottom of that triangle, holding all of the weight instead of being on top this time. Now, regarding the Pope's entertaining Mr. Waldheim, I want to discuss with you some information I gave the bishop here in Monterey. The Pope is coming here, and I went to visit him, and I took approximately 50 or 60 sheets from my broadcast where I talked specifically about the Pope. I said I can't stop his visit, but I want you to know that I thoroughly object to having him in my area, which I consider very special. As I say, not that it would matter to him, but I want you to know that this Vatican has been involved with murder, gun running, drug traffic, sending atomic bombs through the Steve Baum operation to the Middle East, and working with Nazis during and after the World War II up to the present time. And I just want to voice my opinion as one person on how I feel about it. We'll take a one-minute break, and I'll read to you a letter I brought with me to the bishop, what I said, and you can keep in mind the visit of Waldheim at this time with the Pope is thoroughly consistent with what I was telling the bishop about my feelings about the Pope coming here. He's going to be here on the Monterey Peninsula September 17th, where there will be 1 million people at a location, Laguna Seca, then to the mission, and then he leaves. Okay, we'll take a 1 minute break. This is Mae Brussel, and I want to get back to the Vatican, Mr. Waldheim, and some other important matters.